The Catra Podcast Conversations for the Curious Essential Knowledge Simplified, your gateway to essential ideas that matter most. This audio summary has been prepared with the help of a Catra AI. Welcome back to the deep dive. Today, we're getting into something that really hits close to home for anyone online, basically. It's about visual deception.
Yeah, we're looking at Hani Farid's book, Fake Photos, and it's incredibly timely, maybe even of central reading right now.
Absolutely, because it tackles this huge challenge. We're flooded with images, videos, but with AI getting so good, especially deepfakes, how do you, the listener, know what's real anymore? Seeing isn't believing, not like it used to be.
Right. And Farid's core point isn't just, oh no, scary new tech. He argues this is actually an evolution of something very old.
An old human habit, you mean, deception.
Exactly. People have always manipulated images. The tools are just, well, way more powerful and widespread now. So our mission today is to understand that evolution and, crucially, what we can do about it.
Okay, so who is Hani Farid? Why is he the guy to guide us?
Well, he's basically the expert. He's a professor at UC Berkeley, split between information science and electrical engineering and computer science. His whole career has been about digital forensics, figuring out how to spot fake images and videos.
And he's not just in the lab, right? That's key.
Not at all. He's really on the front lines. He consults for major news outlets, you know, trying to verify footage from conflict zones. He's worked with DARPA. He testifies in court.
So he sees the theory and the real world impact.
Precisely. That mix of like deep academic knowledge and practical hands-on experience makes his perspective pretty unique. He gets the tech, but also why it matters for, you know, democracy, security, everything.
So the book, Fake Photos, what's its main goal for us, the learners?
Its purpose is pretty clear. Demystify the tech, give us that historical backstory, which is surprisingly important, and basically arm us with the knowledge to understand what we're up against. It's written for everyone, not just tech experts.
And the central idea, again, is that the tech is new, but the problem isn't entirely new.
Right. The real game changer is how easy it is now. Anyone can create fakes, and social media spreads them like wildfire, often before anyone can check. And this hits us right where we're vulnerable. We're wired to trust our eyes.
But it's not all doom and gloom. Does he offer solutions?
He does, but he's very clear. There's no single magic fix, no silver bullet.
Okay.
The answer has to be layered. We need better detection tools, sure, but also platforms taking responsibility, sensible laws, and maybe most importantly, a big push for critical thinking and media literacy for all of us.
Because the stakes are, well, huge.
Yeah, Farid frames it as fundamental. Fake photos and videos threaten democracy, they erode social trust, and they directly harm individuals through things like scams and defamation.
Okay, let's dig into that evolution then. He starts way back, right, before computers.
Way back, 19th century. He wants to show that fooling people with images is, like, as old as photography itself. Okay, think about spirit photography. This was big in the 1800s. Photographers used simple tricks, like double exposure, to make it look like ghosts of loved ones were appearing in photos with grieving families.
Wow, preying on grief.
Totally. Minimal tech, maximum emotional manipulation.
Right.
Because people wanted to believe.
That desire to believe seems key, like the Cottingley fairies.
Exactly. 1917, two young girls, some cardboard cutouts of fairies, super low-tech hoax.
But it fooled Sir Arthur Conan Doyle, the creator of Sherlock Holmes.
It did. Again, people, even brilliant ones, believed because it tapped into something they wished was true. It shows how susceptible we are.
And politically, this wasn't just for fun or exploiting grief.
Oh, definitely not. Farid brings up Joseph Stalin. This is chilling. Stalin systematically had political enemies like Leon Trotsky literally erased from official photos after they fell out of favor.
Airbrushed out of history.
Completely. It was about controlling the present by rewriting the past. If there's no picture, did they ever exist in that context? It's incredibly powerful. So, yeah, the impulse to deceive is constant.
Okay, so that's the baseline. Humans manipulate images. Then comes the digital age. Photoshop, right?
Yeah, Photoshop was a huge step. Suddenly, manipulation wasn't just for darkroom experts. Millions had the tools. But the real leap, the one we're dealing with now, is artificial intelligence. Specifically, generative adversarial networks, GANs.
GANs, that's the term you hear everywhere. How do they work? In simple terms.
Farid uses a great analogy. Think of an art forger and an art critic. The forger, that's the generator part of the GAN, creates a fake painting. The critic, the discriminator, tries to tell if it's fake or real.
Okay.
They're locked in this constant battle. Every time the critic spots a flaw, the forger learns and makes a better fake next time.
And they do this millions of times.
millions, billions of times, super fast, until the forger gets so good, the critic literally can't tell the difference anymore. The fakes become indistinguishable from reality.
And that's how deepfakes are made, applying that to faces and videos.
Essentially, yes. Mapping faces onto bodies, creating realistic video. But it's broader now, too. AI can generate photos of people who don't even exist, or synthesize your voice from just a few seconds of audio. It's quite something.
So if the AI is designed to fool us, how on earth do people like Fareed fight back? How do you detect these things?
They look for the cracks, the tiny mistakes, the sort of digital fingerprints the AI leaves behind, often unintentionally.
Like what kind of fingerprints?
Well, there's geometric and lighting analysis. AI sometimes struggles with basic physics.
Huh.
You might see shadows that don't match the light sources in the image, or reflections that look weird, inconsistent across different surfaces. The AI is trying to build a 3D scene, but it doesn't always get it perfectly right.
Okay, so looking for physical impossibilities, what else?
Biology. Biometric signatures. Fake faces might look real at first glance, but they can fail subtle biological tests.
Like
blinking. Sometimes deep fakes don't blink naturally or at the right rate, or even more subtly, the pulse.
Wait, you can see a pulse in a video. How?
Yeah, it's amazing. Real human skin has these tiny, almost invisible color changes as blood flows underneath. It's called photoplethysmography, basically.
Wow.
Forensic tools can look for that subtle rhythmic change. If it's perfectly flat, perfectly consistent, that's a sign the person might be computationally generated. No heartbeat, essentially.
That is mind-blowing. But if the forger and the critic, the generator and discriminator are always improving,
then detection is always playing catch-up.
Yeah.
Technology alone can't be the final answer, because the creation tech will likely always be a step ahead, or at least keep pace.
Which brings us to the societal impact and this idea you mentioned earlier, the liar's dividend.
Yes. This is maybe the most crucial takeaway from Fareed's work on the consequences.
Okay, explain that again. It's not just about believing fakes.
No. The biggest danger, the dividend for the liar, is that the mere existence of convincing fakes makes people start to disbelieve things that are actually true.
Right. So a real video surfaces, say, of a politician doing something illegal or embarrassing.
And they can just say, nope, that's a deep fake. And because people know deepfakes exist and are realistic,
a certain number of people will believe the denial regardless of other evidence.
Exactly. It erodes the very foundation of evidence. Accountability just crumbles if you can dismiss inconvenient truths by yelling fake. It benefits the liar enormously.
That really shifts the perspective on the threat.
Okay, let's pull back and look at the big themes Fareed hammers home. The first one seems to be that imbalance we just discussed.
Yeah, the asymmetry of creation versus detection. It's just so much easier, faster, and cheaper to make a good fake than it is to scientifically debunk it. That imbalance means tech solutions alone aren't enough.
Theme two, the erosion of shared reality. This follows from the liar's dividend, right?
Absolutely. If we can't agree on basic facts because visual proof is no longer trusted, how do we function as a society? How does journalism work? How does the legal system work? It fuels polarization because everyone retreats into their own version of reality.
Scary stuff. Theme three, the democratization of disinformation. This power used to belong to spy agencies or maybe Hollywood studios. Now, it's potentially in the hands of anyone with a computer and some know-how.
So the threat is everywhere, not just from big state actors.
Right. It's decentralized, chaotic, which makes it much harder to manage. It puts more responsibility on us as individuals.
Which leads perfectly into the final theme, which is kind of surprising coming from a top technologist.
It is. Theme four, technology is not the sole savior. Fareed, the expert in the tech, is adamant that the solution has to be socio-technical. Yes, improve the tech, but focus heavily on human factors. Education, media literacy, critical thinking, policy.
He really captures these ideas in some memorable ways in the book.
Oh, definitely. That liar's dividend quote is worth repeating. The most insidious danger of deepfakes is not that they will cause us to believe things that are false, but that they will cause us to disbelieve things that are true. That just reframes the entire problem.
And then there's the one about how we consume information now.
Right. We have moved from an era of seeing is believing to an era of believe, then see. We are served content that confirms our existing biases.
Oh, yeah. We look for things that fit what we already think, and the algorithms help us find it. Makes us vulnerable.
Totally. Which leads to his call to action, essentially. Visual literacy is becoming as important as traditional literacy for navigating the modern information environment.
We need to learn how to read images and videos critically just like we learn to read text.
Exactly. It's a fundamental skill now.
So, practically speaking, what can we, the listeners, do? How do we apply this?
The number one takeaway for individuals is mindset shift. Adopt reflexive skepticism. Don't just instantly react, believe, and share, especially if something feels shocking or emotionally charged. Just pause.
Okay, pause, and then what? He offers a method, right? The pause method?
Yeah, it's a handy mental checklist. P is for probe the source.
Look who posted it, not just what was posted.
Right. Is it a credible source? A new account. Check the origin. A, analyze the image or video. Look for those glitches we talked about, weird lighting, bad physics, unnatural movement, odd blinking. Be a mini detective.
Got it.
U, understand the context. Does this image fit with other known facts? Does the supposed location or time make sense based on other news?
Yes.
S is search for verification. Do a reverse image search. Has this image appeared before, maybe in a totally different context? Has it already been debunked by fact checkers?
That's a really practical one. And E.
E is evaluate your emotions. This is crucial. Is this image making you feel really angry?
Yeah.
Really fair, really validated. Strong emotional reactions can be a sign that you're being manipulated. They want you to react, not think. So pause.
That's a great framework. And one more practical point you mentioned earlier. Don't only worry about the super advanced AI stuff.
Definitely. Fried stresses this. Cheap fakes, simple manipulations like slowing down a video, selective editing, or just mislabeling an old photo are often just as effective, sometimes more so, than complex deep fakes.
Like that slowed down Nancy Pelosi video example. Simple tech, huge impact.
Exactly. The intent to deceive matters more than the sophistication of the tool. Don't dismiss the low-tech manipulations.
Oh, okay, wrapping up. What was the most surprising thing for you in digging into Fareed's work?
For me, honestly, it was the depth of that historical context.
Mm-hmm.
Seeing Stalin erasing people from photos or spirit photography, it just hammered home that this isn't fundamentally a tech problem. It's a human problem about power, deception, and belief.
Yeah.
The tech just amplifies it.
Yeah, that resonates. For me, my favorite aspect was actually the focus on the multi-pronged solution. It moves beyond just, wow, this is scary, to, okay, here's a plan.
It gives you a roadmap. Hmm. Tech, platforms, policy, education, all working together.
It feels less overwhelming when you see there are concrete things we can work on. It offers clarity, not just fear.
Which leaves us with a final thought, maybe for you, the listener, to consider, given everything we've discussed. How do we as a society draw the line legally and ethically? The same AI tools that can be used for malicious deepfakes, for fraud, defamation, election interference, can also be used for art, parody, satire, filmmaking.
Right. Where is that line between harmful manipulation and creative expression when the tools are identical?
That's the tricky question we need to grapple with. Defining that line is going to be a major challenge.
Definitely something to think about as this technology continues to evolve.
See you next time with another remarkable thinker, another powerful book, and another idea that has shaped our world. This audio summary is brought to you by Akatra Foundation.